The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Forbes website, When Can You Get a COVID-19 Booster Shot? From the Blind Post, highlights on the out-of-sight moving websites, and the Eyes on Success recent podcasts. From AFB, the Centennial Book Club webinar that was held on the 15th. From CVIConnect.co, awareness and diagnosis of CVI. From Mac Rumors, AirTags opens firmware to all. It's being distributed in unlimited fashion now. BleepingComputer.com has an article on Zloader attacks that disable Defender on Windows. Vox.com has an article on the best money ever spent on a white cane. So let's get started. From Forbes.com, When Can You Get a COVID-19 Booster Shot? By Allison Durkee, D-U-R-K-E-E. Top line, the U.S.'s planned rollout of COVID-19 booster shots for the general public, initially slated to start September 20th, remains up in the air pending approval from governmental regulators. But White House officials said Sunday at least Pfizer shots will likely be ready on time, and the administration is prepared for a quick rollout whenever the shots are approved. Key facts. The Biden administration announced in mid-August that booster shots for Pfizer and BioNTech and Moderna recipients will start on September 20th, but the New York Times reported that timeline may be in doubt, as the shots still have not yet been approved by the FDA, and the Vaccine Advisory Panel at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. Dr. Anthony Fauci acknowledged on CBS's Face the Nation, it's conceivable that only Pfizer's shot will be approved by the 20th, and Moderna's shot will be delayed at the most a couple of weeks, as the FDA seeks more data from the company. Exactly who will be eligible for the booster shot will depend on the exact terms that are approved by the FDA and CDC, he said. Studies are underway on if people can mix and match booster doses and get a Pfizer booster if their first two doses were of Moderna, for instance. But Fauci said the government is still suggesting, as of now, that people get a booster shot of the same vaccine as their initial doses. White House Chief of Staff Ronald Klain, K-L-A-I-N, said on CNN the Biden administration is prepared to have booster shots available to the public probably the very same day as they're approved, and the administration has adequate supply and a distribution plan to ensure widespread availability of the third shots when they're ready to go. Fauci said last week health officials are sticking with the recommendation that people get a booster shot 8 months after their second dose, after President Joe Biden suggested it could potentially be after 6, though it ultimately depends on what the FDA and CDC determine is best. Crucial quote, we are still hopeful that at least one of the vaccinations could be available on September 20th, and the Biden administration is, quote, ready to go as soon as the approval for the boosters comes, unquote, Klain said on CNN, adding the FDA and CDC ultimately will decide which of the vaccines are approved to be used as boosters. They will decide when that approval comes. They will decide who will get it under those approvals. What we don't know. When booster shots for those who received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, an adenovirus-based shot that uses a different technology than Pfizer and Moderna's mRNA vaccines, will be approved. Federal health officials have said it's likely that the one-dose vaccine will also require a booster shot, but they're waiting until more data is in to make an official recommendation, including on whether the vaccine could be mixed with a booster shot of either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. Johnson & Johnson released data in late August suggesting a second shot of the vaccine produces a rapid and robust increase in antibodies that protect against the coronavirus, which could be a promising sign for the booster shot's approval. Surprising fact, the fact that booster shots haven't been officially approved yet for the general population hasn't stopped some people from getting them anyway, despite health officials advising against it. The Delta variant surge has reportedly provoked many Americans to take it upon themselves to get a third shot, such as by making a vaccine appointment and claiming to be unvaccinated. An internal CDC document reported by ABC News on August 11th found an estimated 1.1 million people had already gotten an unauthorized booster shot, a figure the outlet notes is likely an undercount. Key background: Fauci's acknowledgement of Moderna's potential approval delay is in line with previous reporting suggesting Moderna's shot may not be ready in time, with a source familiar with the approval process telling Forbes earlier this week that only Pfizer is expected to be ready for a September 17th FDA meeting on the booster shots. The holdup over Moderna's vaccine approval is reportedly largely based on the booster shot's dosage, as Moderna submitted data based on a lower 50 microgram dose. But the FDA is reportedly seeking data on a 100 microgram dose equal to the initial shots of the vaccine. Pfizer's approval process is also speedier in part because the company has substantial data from Israel's booster shot rollout using its vaccine, the Associated Press reports. The U.S. has already approved third doses of the vaccines for immunocompromised groups that make up approximately 3% of the population, and the country's planned booster shot rollout follows other countries like Israel, France, Germany, and the Czech Republic that have started administering or plan to administer booster shots to at least some groups. The booster shots are a response to fears that the COVID-19 vaccines will wane in effectiveness as time goes on, which some studies have suggested is likely. The vaccines have also shown diminished effectiveness at preventing infection against the Delta variant, although they still remain highly protective against severe illness, hospitalization, and death. Chief critic: The World Health Organization, WHO, has criticized wealthy nations distributing booster shots before many countries around the world have even inoculated a large percentage of their populations with initial doses. This is due to concerns about vaccine inequity, questions about the efficacy of booster shots, and fears that more dangerous variants of the coronavirus could emerge from countries with low vaccination rates. Further reading: Moderna will likely miss booster deadline, Pfizer only shot expected for September rollout, by Forbes. More than three-quarters of vaccinated Americans plan to get COVID-19 booster shot, poll finds, by Forbes. Some vaccinated travelers are already getting COVID-19 booster shots, but experts say that may be counterproductive, by Forbes. Full coverage and live updates on the coronavirus available at the hot link on Forbes.com. Highlights from the September edition of the Blind Post include: OutOfSight.net has moved. Visit our new home. If you would like to join blind and visually impaired members from all around the world, learn about your iPhone, receive technical assistance, play interactive games, discuss great authors in our monthly book club, spin tunes on our internet radio station, challenge friends to a game of chess, wow the audience with your talents at our on-stage event, take chances in our numerous dice games, go shopping with us in our virtual market, and so much more. Stop on by on our new dedicated server. Become a member for free and join us at www.out-of-sight.net. Spoken Word Ministries offers a Christian resource library to blind and visually impaired people. The library contains both books, Bible commentaries, and teachings. To apply, visit https://brailleaudio.org/ and complete the registration form. Thanks and blessings. Highlights on the Eyes on Success shows, news, and podcasts. Episode 2134, Navigating Indoors with the Clue app, CLEW, aired August 18th. Most navigation apps rely on GPS and work well outdoors. Unfortunately, such apps are not suitable for indoor use. Hosts Nancy and Peter Torpy talk with Paul Ruvolo, R-U-V-O-L-O, about the Clue app he developed, which overcomes this limitation by making use of Apple's AR kit and the phone's camera in order to guide users from point to point indoors. Episode 2137, Sharing Experiences with Cochlear Implants, aired September 8, 2021. Blind individuals rely heavily on their ability to hear in order to compensate for the lack of sight. But what happens when a blind person loses their hearing? Hosts Nancy and Peter Torpy join a conversation between Jim Snowberger and Greg Green. Snowberger is spelled S-N-O-B-A-R-G-E-R, and Greg Green is spelled G-R-E-E-N. both of whom are blind and both of whom have cochlear implants, about their experiences with the implants. To listen to other episodes from our searchable archive of over 500 episodes, go to www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also subscribe to the podcast or listen on your smartphone home device by saying play the Eyes on Success podcast. A cane story from Linda Stewart. It was Christmas time and I was revving up to get my next guide dog. I wanted to brush up on my mobility skills with my cane, etc. One afternoon, I asked our daughter Karen if she would like to take a walk with me. She said yes, so we headed out. I asked her to walk behind me and said, if it looks like I'm going to bump into anything, don't tell me. After walking a little while, we began to sing, O Come All Ye Faithful. Right when we were singing the line, Glory to God, I smashed into a truck which was filling the whole sidewalk ahead. Bam! And what a shock! Not only because I hit it pretty hard, but because we had just sung Glory to God, and I wondered why God allowed me to walk right into that truck when we were praising Him. That thought kept coming back to me. Why did you let that happen, Lord? Then one day, when I was in a meeting for the visually impaired, I told one of the other members about that experience. He said, you were holding your cane down too low. If it had been curved more, it would have detected the bottom of that truck. After thinking about it, what he said made sense, and I realized it was my error, and realized I had to learn that lesson. No more questions to God about that. Later, I got my first trucker GPS and created a few landmarks on my various routes. Truck parked across sidewalk. Low-hanging tree branch. Very broken-up sidewalk. My trucker would warn me as I approached these areas, and I knew about 20 seconds ahead of time so I could slow down. What a help that was, just in case my mind was wandering. And some things are pretty hard to remember when you need to know exactly where they are in the middle of a block. That was one of my cane stories. I could tell you more, including guide dog stories, too. Who couldn't? On September 15th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, the American Foundation for the Blind, in partnership with Amazon, hosted a conversation on writing, publishing, and the creative process, moderated by Joanna Hunt, head of accessibility at Amazon Books and Retail. Panelists included Georgina Kleeg, K-L-E-E-G-E, professor of English at University of California, Berkeley, where, in addition to teaching creative writing classes, she teaches courses on representations of disability in literature and disability memoir. She is the author of More Than Meets the Eye, What Blindness Brings to Art, copyright 2018, Blind Rage, Letters to Helen Keller, 2006, Sight Unseen, 1999, and Home for the Summer, 1989. Zachary Shore, professor of history at the Naval Postgraduate School and senior fellow at the Institute of European Studies, University of California, Berkeley, and author of A Sense of the Enemy, Blunder, Why Smart People Make Bad Decisions, and What Hitler Knew, among other works. Joe Elizabeth Pinto, author of Daddy Won't Let Mom Drive the Car, True Tales of Parenting in the Dark and the Bright Side of Darkness. The authors discussed how we can ensure greater representation in publishing and what trends they are seeing in terms of inclusion, both in the publishing space and in terms of accurate representation. They also taught what they were reading and got book recommendations. I'm very sorry that webinar passed. From CVIConnect.co, CVI Awareness, Diagnosing and Knowing Your CVI Learner. That was posted September 7th, 2021, and this is CVI Awareness Month. Have questions or want to know how CVI Connect can be a solution for your child or student? Contact us at info@cviconnect.co. Cortical visual impairment, CVI, is the leading cause of visual impairments in the United States. Uniquely, the number of people with this vision impairment will continue to increase as medical advancements are better able to assess and treat individuals with neurological diagnoses. Historically, individuals with CVI have had a hard time getting this diagnosis. Since this is a brain-based visual impairment, an individual may have perfectly healthy eyes. Imagine for a moment that you have concerns regarding your child's vision, but every time you get their eyes checked, you get a clean bill of health. In your gut, you feel something isn't right. Diagnosing CVI. According to Christine Roman Lancy, L-A-N-T-Z-Y, Ph.D., a diagnosis of CVI includes three parts. First, a child with CVI has an eye exam that does not explain their present level of vision. This means that even if the ophthalmologist indicates the child has nystagmus, involuntary shaking of the eye, this would not explain why the child is not able to recognize faces of those most familiar to the child. Second, a child would have a history of a brain condition, trauma, or damage associated with CVI. Some of the common conditions we may see are asphyxia, encephalopathy, paraventricular leukomalacia, PVL, seizure disorders, intraventricular hemorrhage, IVH, or a traumatic brain injury, TBI. This does not mean everyone with one of these conditions or other structural brain abnormalities also has CVI. Simply, these individuals could be considered at risk and should be monitored if there are vision concerns. Remember, this is one of three elements necessary for identifying CVI. Lastly, we look for 10 visual and behavioral characteristics as outlined by Dr. Christine Roman-Lancey: color preference, need for movement, visual latency, visual field preference, difficulty with visual complexity, need for light, difficulty with distance viewing, atypical visual reflexes, difficulty with visual novelty, absence of visually guided reach. So, if it is so hard to diagnose, how do we know it is the leading cause of visual impairments? Sadly, although the diagnosis is hard to obtain officially, it is still the most prevalent diagnosis. Can you imagine if we had a better system to ensure no children fell through the cracks? How many children are potentially impacted by this and have yet to receive proper medical and educational support to accommodate for their vision loss? The good news is that the functional vision of children with CVI can and should be expected to improve. Unlike with an ocular loss, which typically maintains or declines, when individuals with CVI are provided with regular, meaningful interventions, they can develop their functional use of vision. CVI meltdowns are not tantrums. Have you ever heard or witnessed a CVI meltdown? While they might look like a child throwing a tantrum, they are not. You might observe an individual screaming and lying on the floor, refusing to stand or walk, physical aggression toward themselves or others, or even trying to escape. Much like everything that surrounds cortical visual impairment, CVI, no two learners with CVI look alike. This includes their meltdowns. Unlike a tantrum, CVI meltdowns usually occur due to an overwhelming amount of sensory input. Picture this. We all have an overwhelmed bucket. Throughout our day, things will fall into our bucket. These may not be the same each day either. These stimuli that add to our buckets could be lights, background noise, smells, physical touch, unpredictability, novelty, speed of stimuli, movements, and the list goes on. Sometimes things we enjoy can also add to our overwhelm bucket. There is good news. While not always, usually a CVI meltdown can be avoided. Matt Tiejen, T-I-E-J-E-N, has taught us that when we do not have a balance between the complexity of the visual target and the complexity of the environment, what Matt refers to as the visual battery as being depleted. In this example, when we do not have a balance, we are putting too many drops into the overwhelm bucket. By finding a balance, we are trying to control how often a drop is put into the bucket at a manageable rate. Still, we need to give the bucket a way to drain throughout the day. For a learner with CVI, this means a time when we are giving them a break from needing to use their vision. A calming activity, some time alone, or maybe a preferred activity could be what your learner needs to help empty their bucket before it overflows. Providing a well-balanced day with plenty of opportunities to slowly drain the bucket before it becomes too full is essential for avoiding the CVI meltdown. Know your CVI learner. Knowing your learner and their signs will always be the best tool you can have. Even if you think you've done your best to balance the day, when you see a child beginning to exhibit those warning signs, the team should know the child is trying to communicate with you. The learner is telling you they are hitting their threshold and they need a chance to recharge. This is not a power struggle. This is not a behavior that needs redirection or consequences. It is at this time the team should give the child a chance to recharge. Additionally, the team should look at what is next in the routine to determine if any other additional accessibility changes need to be made. That means if math is next, and typically the child participates visually, the complexity of the visual task and environment need to be modified in order for the child to use their vision again. Or, and this is big, maybe they need to participate using a different modality altogether. Vision may not always be the best learning modality. Have questions or want to learn how CVI Connect can be a solution for your child or student? Contact us at info@cviconnect.co. From MacRumors.com, Apple makes latest AirTags firmware available to all users by Julie, J-U-L-I, Clover, C-L-O-V-E-R. Posted on the 15th, Apple this week continued distributing new firmware for the AirTags that first rolled out in August. There have been several minor releases with different build numbers, and behind the scenes, those tweaks were to meter the number of people who were seeing the AirTag update at one time. The latest version, for example, with a build number of 1A291e, changed nothing other than the rate limit on the percentage of AirTags users getting the update. That update set the limit to 25%, and another build released on the 14th, 1A291f, removes the deployment limit entirely, so all users should now be able to get the firmware update. A portion of people will have already received the new firmware, but anyone who had not should see their AirTags updating over the next few days. There's still no word on what's included in the AirTags firmware, and no new features have been found, so it likely focuses on bug fixes and other under-the-hood improvements. It is not clear why Apple has metered the release of the AirTags firmware update, but it may have to do with the over-the-air distribution method. Apple does not provide an option to force an AirTag update, as it's something that's done over the air through a connected iPhone. To make sure the update happens, you can put your AirTag in range of your iPhone, but you have to wait for the firmware to roll out to your device. You can check your current AirTag firmware version using the Find My app, with instructions available on the hot link in our how-to. From BleepingComputer.com, new Z-Loader attacks disable Windows Defender to evade detection. Article by Sergiu Gatlan, S-E-R-G-I-U-G-A-T-L-A-N. An ongoing Z-Loader campaign uses a new infection chain to disable Microsoft Defender antivirus, formerly Windows Defender, on victims' computers to evade detection. According to Microsoft's stats, Microsoft Defender antivirus is the anti-malware solution pre-installed on more than a billion systems running Windows 10. The attackers have also changed the malware delivery vector from spam or phishing emails to TeamViewer Google ads published through Google AdWords, redirecting the targets to fake download sites. From there, they are tricked into downloading signed and malicious MSI installers designed to install Z-Loader malware payloads on their computers. The attack chain analyzed in this research shows how the complexity of the attack has grown in order to reach a higher level of stealthiness, said a Sentinel Labs security researchers Antonio Perozzi and Antonio Cocomazzi in a report published. The first stage dropper has been changed from the classic malicious document to a stealthy signed MSI payload. It uses backdoored binaries and a series of LOLBAS to impair defenses and proxy the execution of their payloads. Attacks focused on Australian and German banking customers. Z-Loader, also known as Turdot and DE-Loader, is a banking trojan initially spotted back in August 2015 when it was used to attack several British financial target customers. Like Zeus Panda and Flokibot, this malware is almost entirely based on the Zeus V2 trojan source code leaked online more than a decade ago. The banking trojan targeted banks worldwide from Australia and Brazil to North America, attempting to harvest financial data via web injections that use social engineering to convince infected customers to hand out auth codes and credentials. More recently, it has also been used to deliver ransomware payloads such as Ryuk and Egregor. Z-Loader also comes with backdoor and remote access capabilities, and it can also be used as a malware loader to drop further payloads on infected devices. According to Sentinel Labs research, this latest campaign is primarily focused on targeting customers of German and Australian banking institutions. This is the first time we've observed this attack chain in a Z-Loader campaign, Sentinel Labs researchers concluded. At the time of this writing, we have no evidence that the delivery chain has been implemented by a specific affiliate or if it was provided by the main operator. Malwarebytes, who tracks this malvertising campaign they named Malsmoke, since the start of 2020, saw the threat actors infecting their targets with the Smoke Loader malware dropper using the Fallout exploit kit via adult-themed malicious sites. They've switched to sites imitating Discord, TeamViewer, Zoom, and QuickBooks, starting with the end of August 2021, and are likely targeting businesses rather than individuals, according to security researcher NAO_SEC. I have under 4 minutes left, so I'm going to edit the next article from Vox.com. The best $34.32 I ever spent? My white cane. As a blind person, it was a conscious investment in my own independence, by Kudsia Naki, Kudsiya Naqui. She posted on September 15th. I touched down in Denver, made my way through the airport, and got an Uber to a restaurant a friend had recommended. I had made a reservation in advance, walked right in, and was seated at the bar. I enjoyed an entree and a cocktail, and caught up on podcasts while I ate my meal. Later I paid my bill, then took another Uber to my hotel. This all sounds pretty mundane. As a 35-year-old professional, I had gone on a million business trips before, but as a newly minted, openly blind person, it was a huge first for me. Checking in with the hostess, ordering the dinner I selected in advance after perusing the menu online, and being just another patron amid the chatter and clinking of dishes in the hip, busy downtown spot, made me feel powerful and present in a way that was entirely new, and frankly, the meal was quite delicious. As I settled into my hotel room that night, I thought about the object that made this whole trip possible, my white cane. Wielding the cane in the airport, at the restaurant, and at the hotel made me feel powerful and in control, but I recalled a time when that was not the case. I remembered when pulling out the white cane filled me with shame. It was the symbol of my failure to be sighted. I went through life without interacting much at all with other blind people, except for the mobility instructors that my mom arranged for me through our state's blind services agency, starting when I was in elementary school. They would pull me out of regular classes during the day to train me on how to use a white cane. Still, I did absorb some of what these mobility instructors, some of whom were blind themselves, taught me. I learned different cane strokes, swiping across the ground in front of me or using the two-point touch to tap at shoulder-width intervals. I also learned how to navigate stairs and avoid bumping into obstacles in my path. I mastered street crossings, listening carefully for parallel traffic as the signal that it was safe to cross. By middle school, I had cane skills pretty much down pat. But even at that young age, I subconsciously understood ableism and loathed the idea that people who saw me with the cane would think I was weak, deserving of pity, or worse, an amazing inspiration simply because I was able to move at all. At school, I tried to avoid things like dropping a pencil on the ground. As I'd feel around for my fallen writing implement, I would hear the jeers of the boys in my class as they laughed and called me Blindy. At the time, I thought, how dare they lob this horrible slur at me? It makes sense now, considering neither they or I had learned anything in school about disability. I didn't want my vision loss to be the end of me. I found a new mobility instructor as a free service through the State Commission for the Blind and learned to navigate New York City. For 1 hour every week, an extremely kind, patient woman walked beside me while I felt my way through subway stations and navigated intersections. Gradually, she started walking behind me, forcing me to feel more comfortable being seen alone with the cane. One day, she gave me an address to travel to on my own and said she would meet me there. That was the first time I walked the streets and rode the subway with my cane and felt completely fine about it. There was no twinge of shame or embarrassment. When I found my instructor at our designated meeting spot, I had a huge grin on my face. I learned bit by bit not to care who was looking at me or what they were saying. I've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The program content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.